So today we'll be talking about deployment best practices for LRS. We're going to lead in with a few slides just on some positioning of LRS. It is a new product, a new device category. So even before you get involved with hands-on and getting it deployed, it's important to understand how you position that. Ken will take over at that point and talk a lot about the actual deep technical aspects of deploying LRS. And then I'll finish up with a few slides on the Link video stack. The LRS is actually a video endpoint on Link, so understanding that Link video stack is a pretty important thing to do. All right. All right. So, one thing I'd like to communicate is let's take a step back and think about, even before we talk about where LRS is positioned at, the pre-OCS 2007 days, when you had separate modalities for instant messaging, you had a separate telephony system, you had a separate video room system. And part of the idea of why Link is in existence is the idea of bringing all these together so you have a common user experience, common administration experience that helps drive better end user experiences and helps save costs. So we looked at kind of where Link 2010 came from. You had that mixture of telephony, conferencing, IM, and web conferencing all now under the same umbrella, right? And that was what was pushed there. Now in 2013, what they've done is they've added a lot of video collaboration as well as mobility, and now they've added room-based collaboration with LRS. But remember that the whole proposition of why this is interesting is to have that under that umbrella of Link for that common user experience and simplified administration. Now, let's talk about what LRS isn't. It's not about a telepresence solution. And this is very important because a lot of people who are coming in from the existing expectations are thinking about their video room systems in this context. How do I have that face-to-face experience? I can see the sweat on your brow, each little gesture or expression. That's not the purpose of LRS. It's not priced that way. And as you work with your video team, it's important to make sure you set the expectations that this isn't going to be a replacement for telepresence or even that executive video scenario. We've seen a lot of problems with customers who've gone in thinking that LRS is going to be a cheaper way of doing the same thing that they've done before, you know, having different video layouts that you can select, having white glove service where different administration can, you know, automatically start the room. This is not what LRS is about. What it is about is room-based collaboration. Taking the same types of collaboration experiences people have link to link today in terms of, you know, sharing their desktop, doing annotations, whiteboards, that collaboration that Link is known for, they're bringing that into the meeting room space. Now, this is interesting because for a lot of companies, this type of collaboration modality doesn't exist today. They go into a meeting room and they think, okay, I have the video, maybe somebody is, you know, sharing a PowerPoint, but it's much more of a either present or consume type experience. Whereas for LRS, you know, you look at this picture and you have somebody standing on the front there annotating on a whiteboard. This is a new category. So again, keep it. I almost said it.
Should it count?
Yeah. Oh man. So remember, just that this happens. Okay. Here's a quick diagram of the video ecosystem pyramid. Where things are today, you have the video room systems, which are often targeted toward your executive users, and then you have Link, which is targeted toward the masses in terms of desktop collaboration. What the LRS does is start to fill in this middle gap of room-based collaboration in these collaboration spaces. It's intended to be used by a broader array of folks. And like a really classic example might be an engineering company where you're working on CAD designs, there's a distributed team. LRS is a perfect scenario for that. If you're looking for a solution where you're gonna have five executives who are meeting over worldwide, LRS, it may not be the right solution for you. So that's sort of what we dubbed the ecosystem period. They come in a couple of flavors. Right now, there's two major vendors out there. You have Smart and Crestron. And you can see that each of them has both a single display and a dual display. ranging between 70 inches to 84 inches. A lot of you probably have seen demos of this out in the floor room. SMARTS is an integrated panel type model. SMART comes from a background of being very heavy into smart boards in the educational environment. They have really deep penetration there. And what they're trying to do is now break in more into the enterprise space. Creshon comes from a background of room automation. So if you want to, you know, have a company that knows how to do all the blinds and the lighting controls, Creshon has a lot of experience with that. Their solution is an overlay panel with a separate camera so that you can actually use your existing, you know, TV choice if you want to on there. So they're kind of taking more of a modular approach. Just a quick overview on the experience. One of the key value propositions for LRS is that the same user experience you have in scheduling and joining a link meeting, they brought that into the room. This is a really important evolution. For a lot of video systems, the reason why they need the video concierge to help automatically start the meeting is because it's complex for a video room system. So now with LRS, you schedule a meeting just like you would with Link, and you would invite the LRS conference room. And then when the person goes into the room, they just do the one-tap join. If necessary, put in their credentials if it's a private meeting. And then that's all, you're done. So pretty straightforward. One thing I do want to mention is just like the PBX transformation, if you remember when we started to say Link can now be your telephone system, there was an organizational challenge, right? Because we have the IT team now saying, I can do something that is traditionally owned by the telephony team. And there are concerns around politics and job security, things like that. This transformation has a lot of those same dynamics. There's an existing team in most enterprises that deals just with video room systems, just with real estate facilities. They usually are in their own world. So now we're coming into a space as the IT team saying, hey, we can now do something that touches in your world, right? And that can cause some friction. So one of the really important things to keep in mind, to remember, I do say that a lot. Important things to remember is to make sure all of those teams are aligned, potentially at a higher level. Maybe there's a CIO, where there's a business driver from above that says, this is something we want to do. If we try to drive it in parallel with them, you might do a little bit of this. Yeah. So, all right. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Kevin, who's going to go deep. Sure. Yeah. Could you use the mic, please, since you're so close?
Okay. Going back to the scheduling, when you're searching for rooms, what's the best practice for naming? Because we have the naming set up at the moment, country code, location code, you know, the number of people who can sit in that room. And the problem we have is, I mean, we have like 10,000 rooms mm-hmm. worldwide. Mm-hmm. You know, and people need to be able to search for either a video room or a collaboration room. So what's the best practice for setting up that entry so people can search specifically for video or collaboration room?
Do you have thoughts on
that?
Well,
so I guess there's no easy way if you're saying, is it a video room or a collab room, right? It's both in this case. But as far as best practice, the best practice would be to have a naming convention, right? To have something your users can easily understand. What that is will be unique per organization. So I would love to give you an answer, but I don't really have a, well, Pete, you've got an idea?
Yeah, I can answer that. There, when you set these things up,
when you set the collaboration room object up, basically in Exchange, the Exchange aspect of it, you can give it parameters, and you can say this is there's custom parameters, and you can make one for like an LRS attribute, and then you can filter on all the ones that have the LRS attribute set on it, or call it whatever you want, you know. But so you can say it's LRS equipped. This is an LRS equipped room, and then there's also the concept of meeting room distribution lists. So you can go and create a meeting room distribution list and then put just those LRS rooms in it. And then you pick from that, go to that list, and that might be also location specific. So you might have the Boston or the Zurich LRS room distribution list. Then you just click on that, and then it filters that down just to the ones that would apply to your location.
Okay. So, and you know, I think the takeaway of that one is create a new category. Because LRS isn't really a video room, and isn't just a video room, isn't just a collab room, right? So you may need to create a new category in your naming conventions for it. But as long as you have a naming convention, you can understand your your users can understand, then you're in the right direction.
There's one more thing. So we also noticed that once you create an LRS room, there is a tip. So
the mail
tip. As soon as you go to that room, it will tell you that it is a link room system.
Right.
So that also are kind of useful.
Yep. Right. Good. Good feedback. And
yeah.
So quick. So quick show of hands here. How many people in the room have deployed LRS? Brian has to put his hand down. All right. So a good number. Everybody who deployed an LRS, come up to me and grab a Skype card at the end of the session. We've got a bunch to give away. So. So we're going to talk about configuring LRS and the best practices around this. This data is not my data, right? This is data from a collective group of individuals. So the things you're going to see on screen here aren't just my ideas. There's opposing ideas in these slides, right? So what it's going to come down to is there's not always going to be one best answer. So I want to call that out completely and immediately here. This data comes from our field teams that have deployed them and troubleshot bad installations. There have been installations that have gone bad, and I'm sure anybody who's deployed one has seen some things that maybe they didn't expect to see, right? But the team at Unify Square has given a lot of feedback from both our consulting team and our UA team. The SMART team, their field and program teams have been working with me on this session, as have the Microsoft PG and the Microsoft field. So think of me as kind of a collective proxy here. So I tried to take everything that all these teams were giving me and shove it into a deck, right? So anything I've highlighted in red and bold, I felt was really important. It's something we've run into more than once, something that's caused a lot of headaches, right? So if you see bold and red on screen, that's something I'm trying to drive home, right? So I hate to start with RTFM, but the first thing you want to do in any link room system deployment is read and understand the principles laid out in the deployment guide. So got a link to the deployment guide here. There's also some very good content that I've read over and over again, right? And slides will be available after the session too, so you can get a picture of them, but they'll be available to you. There's really good content on linklab.com. There's a guy named Clive from Microsoft who has put up a bunch of LRS content. It's got a bunch of link content in general on there, and he's one of the guys I spoke with a lot in putting this session together, so he's got some great content there. And one last thing here, if you're not running the July 2013 update on your Link server environment, you are causing yourself unnecessary pain. Go put it in, please. It's the admin portal. It's required for that. But there's also some performance things in there that really help out with LRS. So please make sure to have that patch installed, right? So once you've read the directions, you understand the scope of what you're trying to do, you've got to get the right people involved. So IT people are used to working with everyone, but we have to work with networking, right? We've got to have ports in the room, right? We have to work with the Active Directory team. We have to work with the Exchange team. We have to work with the Link and UC team, the telecom team, the video team, the support team, and facilities. So anybody in the room, every one of those teams, right? So congratulations, you have way too many hats on. But so you just have to have a lot of meetings with yourself. But in larger organizations, and this isn't all about large organizations, so if I keep saying large organizations, you can smack me. But in larger organizations, these are a bunch of different teams, usually across different locations, and there's a lot to consider with this. So make sure you get all the right teams involved at the start. It's not going to work very well if you're trying to shove a video initiative in and the video team's not on board, right? So you got to get everybody involved and everybody on board right away. Next, you need to use a certified integrator and installer, right? Work with your hardware vendor and find a certified integration partner. Don't go to Bob's AV shop and ask him if they can put a couple nails in the wall to hang your LRSs on, right? That's a bad idea. Have the vendor involved. So if you buy a smart system or Crestron system, make sure they're involved. They know when you're doing the install. They have some people ready to help you, or you have a contact in case you run into anything, right? The vendors want this to succeed as much as you do. Keep them in the loop. And if you have a Microsoft rep you're working with regularly, keep them in the loop too. One of the things I found is when we involve the vendor, when we involve Microsoft, when we run into a problem, we get the resolution much quicker, right? So let them know ahead of time that you're planning on doing this. Make sure your integrator has a track record of deployment, right? Now, how much of a track record can they have? It's not going to be huge, right? We're talking about best practices of deploying something that's been in the marketplace how many months now, right? So this session is going to evolve. The best practices of deploying this project or this product are going to evolve. But you know, make sure that you're not their first LRS, right? Or at least they've sent their guys to the training, right? And they've got some bench depth. And you know, make sure they're not nailing hammering a nail into the wall and trying to put the LRS on it, right? So this is in the weeks leading up to this session, the hottest topic, right? The most tension between everybody in this venue, everybody who's done LRS. The biggest tension is around, do I domain join the LRS or do I not domain join the LRS, right? So I'm going to talk about both, why they might be good, why they might be bad. Everyone has their own opinion, right? I'm going to hope to sway you towards my side of the argument, which is you need to domain join this thing, right? You might not have it always domain join, right? You might need to troubleshoot or something, but you need to domain join it. You need to work through the problems, and you need to fix your problems if you have them, right? But if you don't want a bunch of objects and a bunch of tiny little islands causing you problems, right? So with domain joining the LRS, you're going to ease the administrative process, right? You're automatically installing corporate root certificates. Brian, can I pick on you for a second? Brian, yeah, Brian from Smart. So Brian calls me 2 weeks ago and he says, hey, I've got a questions on certificates, right? And we went through a bunch of certificate stuff because he was doing a non-domain join, right? And we talked through how to do the certificates. It's not that it's impossible. It's that it's not automatic. And how many people in the room feel like they really understand certificates really well? All right, cool. So that's like a quarter of the people in here at most, right? So not understanding certificates really well means you might make a mistake in how you put the certificates on the device. So that's huge, right? The admin authorization and authentication through domain, right? That makes everything easier. Your life's easier when you have one central place to manage your authentication. You get domain-based MTP. And this is in red because, you know, I found out from David Groom that QoS policy management via GPO isn't yet tested or supported on LRS. That's okay. It works. Use it. I'm a big fan of DSCP and port-based QoS. If you're only doing one of the two, you're not getting the whole picture and you may be missing something. I know network teams don't like Windows boxes marking packets, but if it's marked and it's in the right range, you've got a good shot at being the right traffic, right?
It's just a question on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's not true. That's not true at all. So what you have to do, and the question was, can you assign more than one DSCP to the link client, DSCP marking? You can. What you need to do on that, and I don't want to get into a big session about DSCP. We could do a whole nother hour on that, right? Set port ranges. Apply the port ranges. Set your policies based on communicator.exe or link.exe now, right? And then base your DSCP marking on the port range.
Okay, but that's not on the device, that's on the
network. No, it's not on, that's on the device, it's a group policy. Yeah, Alon Shudnow, shudnow.net has a really good article on doing it, there's one on TechNet. If you have follow-on questions on it, I'd be happy to answer them too. So, but absolutely you can mark every type of traffic differently. No question. All right, so the LRS computers and user accounts need to be in a dedicated OU. One OU just for them. Do not put them with everything else. Block the inheritance on that OU, right? thanks. The applause of one, right? This avoids conflicts with your existing GPOs. If you do not block inheritance, you are creating a whole bunch of trouble for yourself, right? Delegate LRS management on that OU. Another big one, configure WSUS for Windows updates only, right? Or if you're using... Well, you really actually should block SCCM management, but OS updates only, right? That's it. And then be mindful of your password policies, right? So what if we're on the other side of the fence and, you know, I know there's some folks in here that are on the other side of the fence. They believe that not domain joining it's a good idea, right? What was that? Who was that?
Oh, there's one down here.
Oh, we got two. All right. So should we have a little fight where like the Jets and
I started with domain
joining. And you know it's this is not an uncommon story, and I'll, what I said earlier off mic, but I'll say again on mic is The platform itself is ready. The software isn't necessarily all the way there yet. And I'm going to emphasize patching this software a lot. So patch, 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 right? It might not start out this way, but soon SCOM is going to come. The SCOM management packs for these are going to be available. And you're really going to be kicking yourselves when you can't manage these things with SCOM with the stuff they're doing in those management packs. So hopefully the bugs you're running into, you can get them squared away. Well, good side topic, right? So some of the advantages, right? You're apparently you're avoiding top-level AD things that you're not blocking with inheritance or another policy, right? It may ease your initial installation process. I said initial installation process. I didn't say managing the device for the next 5 years, right? Possibly shorter boot times. Yes, we've definitely seen that. Less GPO processing and startup scripts are the reason, right? I am absolutely in favor of a troubleshooting step of joining one of these or doing one of these deployments without domain joining. I'm just not in favor of deploying 100 link room systems and not having them domain joined. So it's up to you, right? What I say doesn't matter as much as what's real in your environment, so you have to make the choice. I hope I've given you a couple of points on why not, but the SCOM management piece, that's the big one, right? That one's right around the corner. I don't know the exact date. I wasn't, you know, given that, or I would certainly leak it real quick. But it's coming, right? It's coming soon. I would just cover the mic and then tell everybody, right? All right, so let's talk about this. AD Exchange and Link, right? We have a computer account domain joiner workgroup. We have Link 2013 enabled Exchange Room mailbox. And we have a Link 2013 pool and policy functionality applying to LRS. It does not point to a 2010 pool. You either have to manually configure it or set your SRVs and Link Discover to hit 2013 pools. Right? So there's an example workflow up there. I'm not going to go over the workflow. It's a good graphic to have, but I don't like talking about workflows on the screen. Right? So for PSDN and conferencing, we're going to EV enable this device in most cases. Right? You're going to want to have the assigned DID. You're going to want to make sure that if you assign a DID to this device, you put that phone number in Active Directory, right? You're going to want to configure your conferencing policies. And if you don't EV enable the device, you're going to want to allow non-EV enabled users to dial out, right? That's going to allow the device to make calls if it's not EV enabled. So, you know, it can make an outbound call to join somebody to the meeting. And then last, certainly not least, right? The LRS requires a wired LAN connection to download all those updates that were such the topic before we started today. And you have to pay special attention to your proxy settings on this, right? So it has to be able to get out, has to get its updates, unless it's grabbing them from, well, even if it's grabbing the OS updates from WSS, right? And this is a hot topic, determine your QoS strategy. Does anybody remember VoIP as you are? How'd that go? Yeah, not to pick on anybody, but that was a bad idea, right? You need the network team involved, right? You need to have bandwidth. This thing takes bandwidth. Alan's going to talk a lot about bandwidth. You need to have bandwidth available and guaranteed, right? So you have to determine your QoS strategy. Port range configuration, as mentioned earlier, set via the leak management shell. DSCP tagging via GPO or local policy. Even if it's not domain joined, you can push a local policy to do the DSCP tagging. So fear not for the folks that are anti-domain joining. Make sure to tag all your modalities, right? It's really important. And then make sure to tag based on link.exe and not communicator.exe. That one's in red because I've felt that pain recently, right? It's bold and red for a reason. And again, everything in red is something I've felt the pain of. Now, I put the little note here, the DSCP-based tagging hasn't been tested and verified by the product group yet. It's on David's radar now, so he and I talked about how important that actually was in real-world deployments, and they're going to test it. It does work from our testing, right? But if it doesn't work, you can't call me. I'm sorry. All right, so then we're going to create our exchange room, right, our resource mailbox. Standard PowerShell stuff here. This is really up here for anyone who hasn't done it. This stuff is going to be in the deployment guide, but it's up here for a reference. My hope is that these slides are useful for you to take away after this session. I'm not going to read commands out loud. I'm sorry. I did that session last year. It was pretty boring. All right. Make sure to set your calendar processing options. Make sure to enable mail tips. They help a lot. You know, it was mentioned earlier, mail tips show that it's a link room system. Localized settings in case you need to translate those mail tips, and then the meaning accept, right? And then a mailbox delegate setting. So we have some special mailbox considerations. First and foremost, LRS, like everything else Link, uses EWS extensively. If your EWS is broken, the calendaring in LRS is going to be broken. So make sure your EWS and AutoDiscover are done right. Right? If you're not sure if they're done right or not, do some reading, figure it out, call somebody who knows, you know, test it, whatever it is. But definitely make sure that's done right. Right? The TNAP stuff. When you're sending meetings outside and you want people to join, and they have an LRS, the little button that pops up to join the meeting on the LRS depends on TNET. So you have to enable it. Right? And then forward your request to your delegate. So if you have someone managing the room, in our example, let's say I schedule the room and then Alan wants to schedule it. I think I'm a lot more important than Alan personally, but from an organizational standpoint, Alan's got a higher title than me. So if he wants the room, he's probably going to have to take it over. But there's a conflict there, right? So you need some type of conflict resolution that's normally done by a human. It doesn't have to be, but you have to do some additional work if not. And then this one's my favorite, delete the subject. If the CEO is having a meeting that says mass layoffs, and that's the title of the meeting, do you want someone walking into that room and seeing on the calendar of your LRS, oh, there's a 3 o'clock meeting about mass layoffs, right? No, you don't. So delete the subject or set it to false for non-private meetings, right? And then private meetings versus open meetings. The open meetings don't require organizer credentials, right? So the organizer credentials are actually entered on the console of the LRS. There's a whole lot of stuff around that right now, so another area where there's some maturity left to grow. Yeah, question?
Is that also goes to smart card
integration? So the question was, is there smart card integration? Basically. And as far as I know, there's not. So two experts in the room, Brian from Smart and Carrie from our UA team, a couple of experts. So if you have questions I can't answer, you can go pick on them, please. I like picking on them a lot. Brian shaking his head, yes, he really wants to talk to you. you're the company man now. I can do this. Okay. So currently, no smart card interaction, but hopefully soon, right? Hopefully. If you're on Exchange Online Hybrid, create and enable the room on-prem before moving it off to the cloud. This is a for now thing. There's some scenarios where this causes some problems if you don't do it this way. I'm sure they'll get fixed sometime in the near future, right? Then we're going to enable our account for Link. There's a lot of great stuff on this screen. You know what I would do if I were you? I'd go to loworld.com and I'd download Pat's script and I'd use that. Here's the commands, right? We create our MSA, our machine accounts, our new account in Link, right? It's a meeting room. So, and then EV enable your LRS. I can't see a reason why you wouldn't want to EV enable your LRS. Link online. Link online. Yeah, I guess there's your reason. Good job, Carrie. Sorry, my brain never goes to online because I'm always focused on on-prem. Sorry. It's still separate EWS and it's Exchange Web Services. Yeah. I don't know. So the question was if EWS and OVA were the same thing on 0365, and I'm not sure on that one. I don't believe so, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong once before. It will probably happen again. And by once before, I mean the last 5 minutes. All right, so conferencing and meeting policies. You cannot just apply the same policies to your LRS as you do everything else, right? You need to enable multi-view join. You have to set your video bit rates appropriately. You need to have the private meeting settings right. Delete the subjects. And the assigned conference type by default. If you get a new conference every time you schedule a meeting, it's going to cause you some pain around LRS. So I'd avoid that for your LRS deployments. All right, the guys with all the bandwidth, right? Network considerations. Plan for appropriate bandwidth, right? That's very important. Deploy call at mission control. And this last bullet, it kind of goes with the first bullet. Set per session limits, right? When you're setting your per session limits, if you have a codec that's taking 90K and that's the one you want to use, don't set your session limit for 100 because you're giving away 10% of your bandwidth on every call, right? So set per session limits, and this is a good practice in call at mission control in general. Set per session limits in line with the codecs that are being used and what their actual utilization is. Otherwise, you're wasting some of your bandwidth, right? Because the call at mission control engine is going to stop. You know, if you have 10 calls, each using 90K, and you've set them all for 100, you've just wasted enough bandwidth for another call, right? Because CAC's not going to let the call go at that point. All right, so moving on to physical installation. Has anybody lifted one of these things yet? I'm told they're heavy, right? So organize some type of transport, right? Probably something a little better than a cart with four flat tires. Just go in there, right? Be very careful with how video cables are routed. We've seen clients that have bent the video cables, right? And when they're not secured or they're bent, then the cable goes bad. You end up with this weird issue where part of the display from one screen goes across two screens, and then you're missing part of the display. And you're like, why is this happening? We've got a software bug. No, you have a broken cable. So you can actually break those cables. Be careful with how you bend them, and make sure they're securely attached. All right? Make sure the room's set up to take advantage of your audio and video capabilities. And please, don't just put the room, for the folks who know anything about acoustics, don't throw it in a room that's completely brick. Right? It's just going to sound and tile on the floor. It's going to bounce around. Put some treatment up. Right? RLX is not very expensive. Put something up. Put some paintings on the wall. Something. Right? Anything. So make sure the audio and video is good. Make sure the lighting levels are appropriate. If you have a really dark room, the picture is not going to be very good. Right? But if you have a really, really bright room, it's not going to be good either. And then this one, you know, this was Brian's big one. He hammered me probably 100 times about this. Make sure the height of the screen is appropriate to the deployment. Is this a standing office? Because standing offices are all the rage right now, right? Is this a sitting office? If it's a sitting office, the height's going to be different than a standing office. So make sure to focus on that type of thing. All right, and then on-prem versus cloud, right? LRS is supported in both, including hybrid. Same EV limitation for link client LRS. When it comes down to it, the LRS is really a lot like the link client, right? So assume if the link client has a limitation with Office 365, then LRS is going to have it too. Link online with Exchange on-prem is not supported at this time. So I can't imagine moving link online before Exchange, but if you happen to do that, you're not supported for LRS. Now the 2010 coexistence, right? The LRS can join the 2010 meetings with limitations, right? It cannot join the private meetings. There's no 2013 features. And that auto-mute feature that's so cool where it detects another link client in the same room and does the auto-mute, it doesn't work in 2010. And there's also some desktop sharing performance things there. And Link 2010 does not replicate LRS objects, so you have to point Link Discover to a 2013 pool, or you have to point the LRS directly to a 2013 pool. And the LRS obviously has to be homed on Link 2013. And then there's LRS admin portal. Great remote administration stuff. There's a lot of things you can do with it. How many people have it deployed with their LRSs? All right, so that's a few. You have it deployed, but it can't actually see your rooms because they're not domain joined.
I can see my rooms, but it can't be.
Right. Yeah, you can't actually do anything with it at that point. So that's another disadvantage of not being domain joined. But if you can't make the thing work on the domain, I guess, is it I can't manage it or I can't even use it, right? So, again, it's up to you.
What we're hearing is CU5
is coming out for 2018. CU5?
For LRS.
Okay. So CU5 should help with some of those, right? Okay. Good. Yes? Okay, so the question was, since you weren't on mic in this recording, the question was, can you have one LRS admin portal, or do you have to have one on every pool for that holds 2013. I'm sure the eventual long-term answer will be you can just have the one. But as of right now, what we're seeing is people with their 2013s home to different pools have to have the admin portal on those different pools.
What about online officers?
It's not supported in online at all. There's no portal for you. I should state this again. I'm not a member of the product group or even Microsoft, so I can't answer that one. There's a couple folks from Microsoft, you know, reach out through, the question was, is the portal supported online? So reach out to your folks at Microsoft and see if they can get you an answer on time frames for that. But I'm not any more hip than anybody else, unfortunately. Because again, I just tell everybody anyway. So other considerations here. Confirm the CA that you use to issue your OWASP certificate has HTTP path included in the CRUL, right? If it doesn't, you're going to have problems. It's that simple. You have to do it. You have to configure a license for this thing, either KeyMS or a Mac, right? Install your patches often, and there are critical patches coming soon. I'm not allowed to say why, I'm not allowed to say what, but I am allowed to say that there's a patch coming right at the end of this month, and you have to install it as soon as possible. Trust me. That's all I can say. Sorry. There's a patch coming at the end of this month for LRS, I'm told. I think the exact date is around the 28th. And it is very important to get that patch on your LRSs. Very important. And then even the server-side patches, test them. Of course, test them, right? Who put patches out without testing them? But test your patches and then put them out as quickly as possible. Server side too. And then this is my last slide, right? Automate it. Last year that was my thing, right? I did a speech on scripting. Automate, automate, automate. PowerShell, PowerShell, PowerShell. Documentation is your friend. That first time you did a deployment, how long did it take? You know? A long time. How about the second one? Less time. How about the third one? Even less time, right? So get it down, document what you're doing. You can even pass those notes back to, you know, through your Microsoft contacts to the PG so they can maybe make some improvements, or to the vendor so they can maybe make some improvements. But document it, right? Because if you get hit by a bus, somebody else is going to have to set one up tomorrow. And then, you know, PowerShell is your friend, documentation is your friend, Pat Richard is your friend, right? He has a new -cslinkroomsystem.ps1 on his website. I've put the URL up. Pat told me yesterday when we were talking he's got some updates coming to that this week. Or this week or next week. I guess he's here, so he might not get to update it now. But that's a big thing. Use that thing. It's helpful, right? And just make sure you create the appropriate policies for your LRS and apply them appropriately. So I'm going to hand it back over to Alan.
Okay. So Link Video Platform. Before I go into some of the technical details of the Link Video Platform, remember that before the LRS came out, for a lot of us, the video modality was kind of a checkbox feature. We played around with it. You know, you have meetings, and sometimes, maybe a first-time meeting with somebody. You click the video button, you see each other, maybe in a small box. It's kind of nice to have, but usually you're focused on IM, audio, and content collaboration. That's what we see a lot at our enterprises. now that we have LRS, I almost think of it as one of the first endpoints where video is a first-class citizen, and is a video endpoint on Link, which means that understanding the video platform on the Link infrastructure takes a much greater importance now that you're doing LRS. Because if you're starting to see grainy video, what have you, it's going to really manifest itself in that video room. And remember that it's not just the LRS that's going to increase video usage. Because people are going to be participating remotely, the people in the LRS room are going to say, hey, turn on your video. So the Link clients are also going to start to use more video. So let's dig a bit dip. I drank a lot. Let's dig deeper a little bit.
He's had to do some shots because of the game this night.
Oh, yeah, last night. So the Link video platform, they've actually made a lot of improvements in 2013 in the video stack. So some of the changes they have, they've now introduced H.264. I think this is not new news, but we'll go into some depth on what that means from a platform standpoint. They, of course, have gallery view, being able to pin the video, smart framing where they're, aligning your video to the right square. and Video Spotlight. So let's understand some of the details of the video stack here. One thing to remember is that, sorry, I'm just, I'll keep in mind, but he's gone. Anyway, if I said keep in mind, how many times did he say right? 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 You know, he's, anyhow, with a lot, like if you think of your traditional PBX, like a Cisco PBX or even something like that, there's one type of approach where you say, I'm going to, there's a pipe between these two endpoints, and I'm going to say, this pipe supports 50 kilobits per call, and it's going to have 20 calls. It's a very sort of network-based model. The way Link manages its endpoints is it's adaptive. It says, you're going to tell me how much bandwidth is available, and I'm going to also be computing what's available on the wire, and I'm going to be tweaking things as necessary to make sure that whatever I'm sending over that wire fits under that constraints. So you don't have the same explicit level of control in selecting codec or selecting frame rate. You're just doing things at a bandwidth level, giving that envelope. So the link itself has several levers for what it can tweak to adjust how it uses bandwidth on the network. You can change the codec, frame rate, resolution, video quality. And one of the things you'll see on the right-hand side of the graph is that in 2010, there was only support for RTV, whereas in 2013, by introducing 264, not only did they introduce 264, they introduced a lot more different resolutions to that mix. So if you see on the right, you can see that for RTV, there's only basically four rows, if you will. With 264, there's probably an additional eight or nine. And so when it's trying to decide how it's going to manage that video stream, it's going to be picking one of those different resolutions, and also, and you can see what the minimum and maximum bandwidth in there. It's a pretty wide range. It can switch up there. It might say, hey, I'm going to switch the frame rate down if I'm starting to see a constrained network, that sort of thing. Again, you don't have specific admin controls over these levers. What you can do is set things like video policy, call mission control. The link stack actually measures the bandwidth. So these are the sorts of things that define what that bandwidth envelope is. And then the quality controller changes these levers. Let's talk a bit about the 264 codec itself. One of the things you've heard is that it's not just 264, but it's 264 SVC. This is basically a standard that was created through this USIF forum by a bunch of different companies as a way to try to have more efficient processing of video. The old school model of doing video mixing requires a lot of heavy DSPs, meaning that when I send a media stream to, say, like a MCU mixer, that MCU has to decode that video stream and re-encode it to all the other endpoints who want to consume that video in a way that's specific to those endpoints. Whereas SVC, the whole principle of SVC is I'm sending a stream, but it actually has several mini streams within it. And then that MCU can basically send, unpackage different parts of those mini streams and send it to those respective devices without having to do an expensive decode and re-encode. This way, it's more of like a switching model rather than a decode-encode model. And that requirement from a CPU standpoint goes tremendously down. There are three different dimensions for SVC. There's frame rate scalability, which is to say, am I sending 30 frames, 15 frames, that sort of thing. There's also quality scalability, which is to say, it's almost like how many bits am I throwing? Kind of, I think of it as the difference between MP3 and and like a WAV file, right? It's like, what's the resolution of the bits I'm putting into that video stream? And then there's resolution scalability. What's the ratio of pixel ratio that I'm sending? For Link 2013, they only support mode 1, which means that they can only scale with frame rate. And that's going to be an important thing to keep in mind as we go into some later slides. I'm hoping that they'll add more additional modes in the future. The more modes you have, the more flexibility you have with the different devices that connect to your conference. But for now, it's just mode 1 or the mode 0, which has no scalability. So where does this come into play? The audio MCU in Link and the video MCU in Link are very different. The audio MCU is a mixing MCU, and the video MCU is a switching MCU. This is a really important concept. So if you look at the diagram on the left here, let's say you have two users talking, user one, user two. The audio MCU actually takes both of those audio streams, decodes those, and then creates another audio mix, re-encodes that, and sends that to user three and user four. So it's truly decoding, re-encoding. It's doing a mixing function. Whereas for video, video comes from user one, video comes from user two. In a traditional video MCU, where there's a DSP and hardware, they might decode those two, create another video that has, you know, some different layouts two users here, one user here, that sort of thing. And then they can recode that. And they can do that because they have really good DSPs. Link does not do that. Link only does switching when it comes to the video processing. So that video one stream from user one goes straight to user three without any decode or re-encode operations. Same thing for user two and user four. Now, how can we leverage SVC? Well, let's say you have the situation below, where you have the user one, which has requested a full screen, and then you have the bottom user, who's also requested full screen, but they've computed that there's lower bandwidth. Well, this is the perfect case for Link and how it can use SVC. User one is sending his video 30 frames per second with the SVC. And that video MCU, even though it's a switching MCU, because it's SVC, it has the option of sending lower frame rate packages to endpoints that can't accommodate the full 30 frames per second. This is a great example where then that user two is going to get 15 frames per second, where I've kind of represented with the dotted line there. And the user one is getting a full 30 frames per second. Now, what happens, though, if the user one on the right has full screen, but for user two below, he has a gallery view? So the resolutions are no longer the same. At this point, SVC doesn't help us anymore. You have user one who's sending video full frame rate to user one on the top right. Even though the user below on the bottom right is also requesting user one, it's a gallery view. That's that little square, not the full resolution. So this is actually a different video request. So user one on the left actually needs to send a second video stream to the MCU, which is going to pass on to the gallery view. So you can see how that switching component comes into play. And it's an important concept that, you know, the idea that we have to send multiple video streams is something a lot of people don't realize when they implement video. So this could be one, two, three, et cetera, et cetera. And I should mention that from a video stack standpoint, this is another dimension that the media stack governs in its quality controller. It knows that it has X amount of bits, X amount of bandwidth that it can accommodate. At some point, if the requests come and I have to send, say, five streams and it would exceed my bandwidth, it has some logic in there to say, well, maybe user one no longer gets to have that full HD session, just because I can't accommodate all those streams. Now, 2010 interop, multiple streams also come into play when you're having interop with 2010. Because the 2010 client doesn't support H.264, if they're joining a meeting, that means that the user one has to send 264 to the Link 2013 client, and then for the 2010 client, they have to send RT video. Even if they're the same, you know, resolution, they both requested full screen, both requested HD, that's going to happen. And again, that's going to have a pretty big impact on your bandwidth there. So we generally recommend to try to keep your client versions consistent up on 2013 so you don't have this issue. Okay, so admin settings for bandwidth management. As Kevin mentioned in his section, enabling video for PDP interconferences. This is one of the settings you can have. You could say, if you wanted to say, I only want video to be done in conferences, or I only want video enabled for point-to-point, just to limit your modalities. Applying endpoint bandwidth limits to different users is another tool that you have. So through policy, you could say, maybe this set of people can do video, and I will enable it for them, versus this other set of people, I'm not going to give the same level of bandwidth allowed. Multi-view support, if you want to have people see the gallery view, that potential for higher bandwidth because people can say, I want to see you and you and you. Somebody else might want to say, I want to see you, you, and you. You start to have a lot more video streams flying over in a conference. So that's another lever that you might want to play around with. Level 2010 coexistence, as I mentioned earlier, you know, that's going to have a lot more RTV traffic rather than 264 traffic. CAC limits, clearly, and of course, cross settings to prioritize is going to be even more critical now for video than it was before. So what we're recommending to customers is think about LRS and video the same way you did today with doing PBX integration. We know we have to do cross for audio, right, to ensure a good quality of experience for voice. Now with video, same deal. If you want to avoid all the grainy choppiness, you have to do cross. So now putting this all together, you know, our top recommendations is make sure you do network planning early on. Understand what types of scenarios you're trying to target for in your use cases. You know, are you going to support HD for how many users? And then do your network planning to make sure you can accommodate that in your environment before you do LRS. It's not a video as you are type approach. Okay? We have one slide. Now, video interoperability is a complex topic. And I just want to share some initial thoughts just on this final slide here on video interop. We could probably go into more discussion later on if you want to have a one-on-one conversation. But the video interop story today is a bit mixed. You've probably heard that Microsoft has announced its video interop server, so that's going to be coming. But keep in mind that, remember that the video interop server, it only supports audio and video for point-to-point. So if you're looking, for instance, to have your Cisco, you know, VCC units or your you know, join link conferences, that's not something that they've committed to right now. And there's no content right now in the plan. So it's really giving you sort of a limited, you know, it's a first step, if you will. There's also Cisco themselves have come out with a video interop server. And that also is a back-to-back UA model. But for that, you're joining the Cisco meetings. It's not like Cisco's going to come out with a server that's going to let the Cisco rooms join the link meetings either. They want to have the link endpoints join the Cisco meetings, and you have one-way content sharing at a max of 720p for HD. So that's another option there. Polycom has, if you have an RMX, they also have a solution where you can do bidirectional content sharing through what they call a CSS server. For those of you that are in the whole H323 world, there's a protocol called H239, which is how the existing video ecosystem does content sharing. That is a different mechanism than Link's content sharing, which is more based on the protocols you might see, like when you do remote desktop. So what that CSS server is, it's basically a Windows machine that translates the there's a plugin that you install with a link client that will send that content to this CSS server, and that CSS server will translate that to 239 protocol. But for that, again, you're going to now be scheduling your meetings on the RMX. It's not the same click to join experience you have with the link ecosystem. So it's a solution, but again, there's trade-offs there. And finally, there is native link interop. Polycom has, it can directly register with Link, so you can do point-to-point sessions, and it can participate in conferences, but the content sharing is, it's just one way and it comes over the video stream. So the content sharing isn't the greatest story there. So it's kind of the current ecosystem. What we're finding with customers is that if they absolutely need, you know, integration with some of their legacy video systems, we were advising a bank in Singapore on this, and they ended up aligning basically to do a limited RMX deployment so they can get sort of a key executive scenario to be enabled with their existing video properties. But then they really, from a cost standpoint, they want to deploy Link for more of the masses, if you will, with LRS's possibility there. So. Again, it's an evolving story. I think in 6 to 12 months, there will be more options. And I do know if you, from Polycom, they're actually taking a strategy where they can do some barbelling between the RMX and the Link server, which is a really interesting scenario. So that you can fireball those two MCUs. And that should be, I think they're thinking it might be coming out middle of this year or so. That'll change things a bit. So that's all we have. Hopefully you've learned a lot more details about LRS. I'd like to open up for questions for Kevin or myself.
So as a best practice, you guys didn't mention this, but as a best practice, would you guys recommend to have CX5500 or 5000 instead of camera on top of the monitor?
Yeah, I can share just some quick thoughts on that. So just to give some background on that, the CX5500 is the next generation round table. It actually it looks more like a existing Polycom Star phone with a round table head. And basically what Polycom's done is they've partnered with Crestron. So they're using Crestron for the display, but they're using that round table for the audio and the video device. Our perspective on that is that the having the video in the middle of the room, one of the advantages, it does give you potentially more distance if that table is farther away from your display. If you're presenting, and you're standing up by the screen, that round table will capture you as a presenter and feed you off to the rest. But the thing is, if you're a consumer, if you're in an LRS room and you're consuming video, you're going to be looking at the screen and talking to the screen. But if the round table is here, what you end up seeing is a lot of sides of heads. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I did want to introduce Carrie Dick, who heads our user adoption practice and a lot of our video strategy. Did you have any thoughts, Carrie, on...
I think it really depends on the purpose for that room.
Hey, Carrie. I'm sorry.
I think it depends on the purpose for the room. If the room is going to be more for discussion than content, then perhaps it's the right choice for that space. The problem that people had, like Alan said, was a lot of times, it's a little bit unnatural for people to look in the camera in the middle of the table. And one funny phenomenon we've seen with the panoramic view, and I, it kind of cracks me up, but people would, in the old school world, project their own image on the screen of the people sitting across the table from them, when you could just look across the table and see the person, instead of looking at the screen up here of the person across the table from you. So there's some learning that has to happen around using that camera. And if it suits the use case, then I say absolutely yes. But if the meeting room is about collaborating over content and the video is more a passive involvement in the meeting, then I think the standard front of room camera is probably better.
Panoramic's going to have an impact on the video bandwidth as well, isn't it? Because it's a separate stream.
Yeah, it's a separate stream. And if you go back to that codec table, you're going to see a resolution there that maps to that panoramic. Of course, very short, very wide. One thing that's worth mentioning that we're seeing in customers is that end-user training and adoption and on-site support for the first users who use this is totally critical. I know it's even though it's based on the Link platform, it is a very, very different user experience. Going into a room, trying to use the display to join a meeting, share content, dial out, things like this. So we're seeing enterprises. The enterprises that are succeeding are the ones that are really taking that message to heart and investing in user training. That's some of the projects we're doing are that's a big component. Any other questions? Oh, Kevin.
All right. Well, what was the count? What was the
six.
Count?
It was six and a half.
That's what I got. Yeah, it was six and a half. Yeah. I got six. So, well, I guess we'll just if you've deployed in LRS or if you know the count, come on up and grab one of these. When they're all gone, they're all gone. I think there's 13, so don't bum rush. And if there isn't one left and you want one, Alan will give you $10.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, everyone. Please remember to fill out your evals.
Happy birthday to you, too.